Hey folks, Jared here. Walker Mills, your host today, is joined by Jongsoo Kim to discuss the role of Marine Infantry in Expeditionary Advanced Base Operations. This episode was edited and produced by Marie Williams. We are still looking for audio editors, so if you are interested in joining your team, please reach out via email at ccontrol@simsec.org with your resume. Did want to highlight a couple developments over at the main website. In the last 2 months, we've launched the Flotilla, SimSec's warfighting society focused on tactics. And just this week, we launched our Naval Wargaming Discord, so you can find more information at simsec.org. Finally, I want to take the opportunity to recommend our partners in the SimSec podcast network, the Bilge Pumps. You can find Alex, Jamie, Drac, and a pile of Iron Brew bottles wherever you download your podcasts. On that note, I'll turn it over to Kimber Smith.
You're listening to Sea Control, hosted by the Center for International Maritime Security.
Welcome back aboard the Sea Control podcast from the Center for International Maritime Security. Today we're talking with Lieutenant Junior Grade Jongsoo Kim, a civil engineer in the Navy. Today we're going to be talking about his recent article that was published in USNI Proceedings, Design the Littoral Combat Team Around Its Core Mission, which also won first place in the annual Marine Corps Essay Contest. Welcome aboard. Can you introduce yourself a bit more formally to our listeners?
Hey, good evening. I'm Lieutenant Junior Grade Kim, originally hailing from Seoul, South Korea. I grew up around the country in California, Pennsylvania, and New York. In college, I studied mechanical engineering and history, and I've always had an interest in military history and definitely a nerd when it comes to doctrine, history, and basically the military arts in general.
Before we start, I'd like to remind our listeners that the opinions presented here are solely our own and should not be taken as representative of any of the institutions that we're associated with. To start out, can you give us kind of a brief description of EABO, the Marine Corps New Concept, Expeditionary Advanced Base Operations, as you understand it, and kind of the context for why the Marine Corps is moving in that direction, which kind of sets the scene for the article that you published?
I'll start with that. EABO is the sign that the Marine Corps is transitioning from a force that exploits the naval dominance that we've enjoyed since the fall of the Soviet Union into a force that has to contend for maritime superiority on the high seas. I think it is an admittance that with our pacing adversary in China, that and also cognizant of all the global naval commitments that the United States Navy has, that the Navy itself would not be able to deter China enough around its peripheries. So I think we have tasked the Marine Corps to project lethal firepower against naval assets and, in a sense, become part of the naval battle space instead of exploiting a naval dominance. How EABO fits into this is quite interesting. So the Marine Corps imagines the EABO as pretty small, austere bases that possesses weaponry that could strike out and reach both ships, aircraft, and ambitiously even submarines. The Marine Corps, I refer to them as they because I'm a Navy officer, see them as austere, low-key, hard to identify and target, and lethal compared to its size. And they're expeditionary and very advanced because they will be inside the enemy's weapon engagement zone and can be struck and are under hostile fire in conflict.
Thanks. I think that's a decent description. And I would just add that the EABO concept, while the concept document is classified, there's a good amount of robust discussion that's been published and you can find online kind of about what it is and whether or not it makes sense. And I would also say kind of from where I sit, I think there's a little bit of a, I don't want to say moving the goalposts, but a little bit of a shift in how we understand EABO, and I feel like I've seen recently more an emphasis on what the commandant calls the reconnaissance and counter reconnaissance fight. So still lethal capabilities at kind of austere and small and low signature bases in maybe the first island chain, but potentially less emphasis on the any surface fires and a little bit more on enabling capabilities for the joint force. John, moving forward, in your article, you talk about the littoral combat team. So can you describe that for us, and how is it different than the Marine Corps' traditional, you know, operating organization, the Marine Corps Expeditionary Unit that we organize and deploy all over the world?
This document is on the public, and it's the tentative manual for Expedition Advanced Base Operations. And in there, it recognizes basically us standing up of two distinct units. One is the Marine Littoral Regiment, and one is the 2030 Marine Expeditionary Unit. And the Littoral Combat Team is the core combatant element of that Marine Littoral Regiment. Its mission statement is that it builds and it operates and command and controls multiple EABs that can be either fires, forward arming refueling, so FARP, or a combination of them, and provides command and control over those EABs and basically fights them. So in a sense, it is more or less equivalent to the ground combat element of the Marine Expedition Unit. And then you have to juxtapose this next to the 2030 MEU, which is a evolution of the current MEU that is a reinforced infantry battalion with basically every single joint fires and enabling capabilities that a battalion commander could want. So it basically adds additional, more higher capability air power. It gives you precision munitions. It gives you more precision firepower, more reconnaissance, and also more robust logistics. So I guess how I describe the Littoral Combat Team and how it differs from a MEU is that the MEU, and is also its MEU 2030, is still a infantry-based maneuver element, maneuver combat team, while the Littoral Combat Team fights a more static fight against naval assets from multiple expedition advanced base that support each other via reconnaissance and supporting fires and logistics.
And just to be clear, when we're talking about a littoral combat team, is that that's based around an infantry organization at what size?
The doctrine right now says an infantry combat team that is centered around a battalion size unit. So a battalion added with additional enabling units.
Okay. So now kind of getting into your argument that you made in proceedings, you suggest a less infantry-centric littoral combat team. So can you tell us maybe what both why you think that would be a better fit and what that would look like and how it might be organized a little bit differently?
So I'll start by saying, hey, I approach this problem more as how I was trained as an engineer versus the Marine Corps, which is how they're trained. I think the Marine Corps basically starts all problems with a rifleman and his weapon, and how to enable the rifleman to solve a problem of killing the enemy. I approach a problem a little differently. So I'll give the example of the Fairchild A-10 as an example. The engineers at Fairchild realized that in order to destroy Soviet tanks in the Western Europe theater, that they needed a large 30-millimeter cannon, rotary cannon, to destroy tanks. And they realized they need to utilize that and attack tanks from above. So they put the gun first. That's the effective weapon. And basically built the plane that effectively utilizes that weapon system. So let's take that approach into the new battlefield in the Western Pacific. So what does the Marine Corps want to kill? They want to kill ships and aircraft. What kills advanced DDGs and fourth and fifth generation combat aircraft? It is advanced anti-ship missiles and advanced anti-air missiles. So let's start with that platform. So I'll take the ship part just for an example. So what do you need to effectively utilize a anti-ship missile? You need the firing platform. You need a robust fire direction center. You need robust communications to enable that, and to enable the command and control nodes to talk to each other. And then you also need a extremely robust sensor that could reach beyond the range of our next generation anti-ship missiles, which you're talking 150, 200 miles. And if you take that to, as totality, that itself is more than a battalion's worth of people, expertise, and equipment. And to give that task to an infantry battalion and to attach some fires elements to it and say, hey, figure it out, I don't think that's the right way to approach the problem. So what I would say is, hey, form that kill chain of the archer, the sensor, the commander, and the communication link, and figure out how to best protect it and allow it to kill ships the best way. Like the same way we built the A-10 by saying, hey, we figure out the most effective weapon against a threat and build the plane around it. And that's how I kind of got to my conclusion of utilizing a building the LCT, taking out the infantry-centric focus and putting in fires and FARP elements inside the LCT, because that's what its mission statement as stated in the tentative manual say. So I'm really not arguing that the LCT should have a different mission, but I'm simply arguing that the for the mission that the Marine Corps is wants to assign the LCT, perhaps they should take a different approach to solving that problem and designing a unit that kills ships as the Marine Corps wants to.
I think that's a really interesting argument. And some of our listeners may know that a couple of years ago, kind of before we had received the EABO concept documents and the force design program, I made a somewhat similar argument that basically said, hey, look, if we want to work on sea denial, the infantry, you know, and I say this as an infantry officer, is not the key capability. And I thought that kind of culturally, that's going to be a kind of mental block, a framing block for some of the force design efforts, because the organization, as you know, has always been about the every Marine a rifleman, you know, and I think that served the organization really well. But if your mission, like you're saying, is sinking warships, right? Infantry doesn't necessarily have a role in that. I think some people would be quick to say, well, you need local security. You know, you've got to secure these FARP sites or these EAB sites. And I would flip that on its head and say, well, if every Marine's supposed to be a rifleman, you don't need dedicated infantrymen to secure austere bases, right? They should, you know, these airmen and these logistics Marines should be able to do that themselves. So I'm very interested to see as well kind of where the organization goes, because my read on the situation is that the Marine Corps is still kind of in experimentation. And I think that to some degree, there's almost they almost have to leave the infantry somewhat at the core of the organization during some of the early experimentation, just because it's built in and that change will have to come a little bit more slowly. But I think, John, you certainly got some good points there for why we might have to do it differently.
So actually, you actually bring up a great point about, hey, why can't logistics Marines and why can't air wing Marines protect their FARP sites? You're absolutely correct. That's actually part of my article. And there is a good portion that says, hey, the infantry mindset of being able to fight the enemy and take the fight to the enemy in the most austere conditions, is that requirement only increases because of how EABs will be operating inside enemy weapon engagement zone and logistics will be extremely strained. And the tenacity and the resourcefulness that infantry Marines show, that skill will have to be bred into all the other branches, all the other communities inside the Marine Corps. And currently, I think that's something that the non-infantry community can work on. And if you want me to elaborate into that, I can, from especially my experience inside a CV battalion.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really good point. And, you know, as much as I'd hope to say, you know, we know every Marine's a rifleman and every Marine gets a certain level of basic infantry training, it's not, you know, perhaps as much of it as it should be. And I think, like you're saying, moving forward, that's going to be critical, especially if we want to, you know, operationalize the EABO concept. So yeah, if you could give us a little bit more about your perspective from being inside a CEB battalion, I think that'd be great.
So just as a correction here, not a CEB, but a CEB, a sort of construction battalion. So the Naval Construction Force. So I think I have a little bit of experience in speaking to the infantryization of a non-combat type. So CBs, officers and enlisted alike, we show up to a Naval Mobile Construction Battalion at MCB with zero training in firearms, in field skills, and in any infantry tactics. But our unit is expected to go in harm's way and construct general construction to code in combat zones, historically including Fallujah, Afghanistan, Vietnam, and all the way back in history into Iwo Jima. And that means that infantry skills has to be taught to us after the fact that we checked into our ultimate destination units. A lot of the skills are taught secondhand or on OJT by more senior CBs. And more importantly, our ISIC, Naval Construction Group 1, has a training cell that of senior infantry Marines that whose task is to embed into a battalion and teach the junior folks, junior officers and junior CBs, how to survive on the field. It takes so basically every time we end the deployment and we return to home port, we conduct exercises that build confidence in their ability to operate in fire team, squad, platoon, armored convoys, and we build those skills almost every year. So I think as the Marine Corps perhaps take the focus away from dedicated infantry and need to instill that toughness and infantry mindset into the rest of the Corps, perhaps a dedicated infantry training cell that adds infantry style training into a workup cycle might be a good path. And honestly, and skills like that atrophy quite quickly. I was out in the field for 3 weeks practicing that skill, especially motorized convoy operations. And I've been out of that course for about 6 months. And I tried to remember what BAMSIS was today, and I couldn't remember what M was. So I think to instill that skill, I think non-infantry units need a certain cell of competent infantry Marines to add that training basically every workup cycle to keep those skills sharp.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. And I do think there are some units that have a couple of representatives that work on that. And certainly when during the workup cycle for a MU or a larger deployment, these non-infantry units get kind of integrated in for some of the training. But definitely the questions about what kind of skills do units need and what kind of skills do we need to be hosted at an EAB, I think are really good questions. I want to ask about integration between the CBs, Naval Construction Battalions, and Marine Corps engineers, right? Because I think a lot of Marines understand that the CBs exist, and they understand that the Marine Corps has engineer communities, but they're not exactly sure how those organizations work together. And I think I saw recently a Marine Corps general saying that there might be kind of hybrid organizations formed, or I think he used the term pioneer battalions. And certainly our commandant has messaged that EABO is going to have a lot tighter Navy and Marine Corps integration. So I was just wondering if on your end in the CB community, you've seen movement or exercises or conversations about integrating Navy and Marine Corps engineering.
Yes, I'll talk to that. So traditionally, Per the MAGTAF cost of operations, a MEU will actually deploy if they are to with a company-sized CB organization called a air detachment. It forms the fourth component on top of the ground combat, air combat, logistics combat elements, and it engineers the battlefield for the MEU commander. I mean, that's the traditional role that a frontline CB unit will play in a traditional MAGTAF unit. We still fill that role, but moving forward, I think we are in a tighter communication and cooperation with the marine engineering community. Most closely, we work hand in hand with marine wing support squadrons and also engineering support battalions. Currently, in our AO, as we are forward deployed, I don't think I want to say exactly where, but we actually have Marine Corps Marines in our sights, augmenting our capabilities, and they are an essential part to our organization, even in peacetime, and I'm sure even more during in times of conflict. In terms of integration, I think that we're in that process, but we have to make sure that there are some things that Marines are really, really good at, and there are something that CBs are very, very good at. And the difficulty or the devil in the detail will be to identify where that is and to build organizations that complement each other. As you said, the pioneer battalions that are going to be coming up in the Marine Corps. Maybe I'll talk to perhaps a few of those strengths. And having been around Marines, both in the ESV and the MWSS, I think Marines are extremely competent in battle skills. If you tell a Marine engineer to go build a berm this high and this much, they will execute it and they'll get it done no matter what. I think what CBs do better at is, as a community, is to integrate it. For example, CBs have both a tactical organization formed of fire team squads and platoons, and we also have our construction organization, where we have titles such as crew leaders, project supervisor, quality control, and safety supervisor, the same way a construction site would. And we jump around on that depending on the needs of the project or needs of the task, while the Marines stick to their military organizations despite an engineering and military tasks. The CBs do a good job of integrating specific parts that battle drills and Marines do very well and basically making into a product that the entire battle space commander might need. Basically, if a MEU commander says, I want to land aircraft here, I feel like a Marine captain, engineering captain, would be like, okay, sir, I have this FARP site all kitted up in my, like in a tricon. I could spread it out for you and set it up to you in 3 days. While a CB lieutenant, a detachment OIC, would be like, okay, let me go draw up a print. Let me go buy some stuff off the local land, and I'll build you one that will last you maybe 2 months, but I won't need any TOA from you. And we'll design it, and we'll make it work, and we'll all tape it together. So I think that's the kind of differences that we have, and I don't know exactly where we would interface the best. And that is actually going to be probably my next project, and a project that my community is very interested in solving in the next few years.
I think that's really interesting because, yeah, I wanted to kind of know what's the capability difference, but it seems almost like you're suggesting that it's as much as a kind of a cultural or a mindset difference in how the Marine Corps engineer community is different from the Navy CV community. So as we're kind of getting to the end of the podcast here, I wanted to kind of leave you with like a general question. Do you have any kind of final recommendations for EABO or the Marine Corps' Force Design 2030 from the perspective of a Navy engineer? I mean, what, you know, what do you, besides obviously what you've laid out for us already and in your article, what other kind of general recommendations do you have from where you sit?
I guess I will make this recommendation more as a engineer than someone in the Navy. I know that it changes very drastic, and from everything I've read, haven't met the man, but it seems like General Berger is bent on transforming the Marine Corps in his tenure. And I know a lot of people, it was frightening to see infantry battalions get smaller. It was frightening to see tank disappear. But I would say that this is absolutely necessary in as we retool and refit for the next fight ahead. And lastly, I want to give out a shout out to a kind of an often unseen part of the Navy. It's called the Naval Expeditionary Combat Command. And in a sense, that's the type command that I'm in. It consists of my fellow Seabees, Coastal Riverine Forces, and a lot of logistics people, a lot of the people that's honestly going to set up the EABs and the advanced naval bases that is going to serve as the link between the Marine Corps and the Navy. So I think we're up to some great stuff, and I want to see make sure that everyone sees us on the horizon as they go about in their careers. We usually have pretty faded NW Type 3 uniforms because we've been wearing it longer than the other rest of the Navy has. And sometimes we look like Marines that are in less good shape, but look like Marines. So say hi to us when you have a chance.
The listeners can't see it, Jung, but obviously you know that I'm smiling. Because another piece of writing that I did was basically what is the NECC, the NECC, which is what was called before they reorganized it into the NECF, the Naval Expeditionary Combat Forces. Because I think, like you're saying, that's going to be an absolutely essential organization that is often, I don't want to say forgotten because that sounds too strong, but sometimes not remembered, I guess, in conversations. And I think that's an absolutely key piece of the Navy for the Marine Corps to be integrating with. And I would, I guess, challenge you a little bit because I, you know, instead of scary or frightening, I think it's a really exciting time to be in the Marine Corps. And I think that the change is creating a lot of opportunities. But at the same time, I think, it, you know, there is a cost of change. And I think this is kind of what you were getting at. There is a cost of change. And there are going to be, I guess you could say, casualties of change, whether or not they're career casualties or something like that for Marines that don't want to or have a more difficult time adapting. But I do think that it's an exciting time to be a Marine. And unfortunately, we're almost out of time for today. But before we go, I'd just like to ask, you know, what you're working on. You mentioned you were working on something for your community. But if you're working on any more writing that you intend to publish and anywhere that our listeners might be able to find you online.
Currently, I do have a couple more pieces that I think it's at a readable stage. I sent it around to periodicals that I regularly read. And if they think it's good, you might see more works from me. They'll primarily be about EABOs. And another big interest that I have is the shore infrastructure that sustains the afloat fleet. So that's another academic interest of mine. And that's another thing that I'll be writing on and hopefully getting good enough writing to publish.
Awesome. Well, we look forward to seeing it. Obviously, at SimSec, we understand the tension between having a day job and trying to get content out there on the web as well. I'd like to thank my guest, Jong-Soo Kim, for joining us today to talk about his recent essay, Design the Littoral Combat Team Around Its Core Mission, that was published in USNI Proceedings and won first place in the Marine Corps Essay Contest. Take care. Oh,
Sandlot.